Bud Steen. And Bud, in a couple of interesting plays, I want to get you right off the hop. When you look at a situation that would happen in Winnipeg, when there was a play, and then there's a subsequent play, and then they were able to challenge on the prior play. How does this all come about as the officials look at this?
Very, very good question. Let's just say that the texts were going fast and furious between myself and my boss while I was watching the game.
Right.
So what we had in the Toronto game was clear evidence that Winnipeg intended on challenging the play. Coach O'Shea had his flag on the ground, and it was seen by the game day supervisor. The rule book is pretty clear. It says that challenge has to be initiated prior to the next legal snap. So in this case, the head coach had done that. He had put his flag on the ground, initiating the process. The book goes on to say that it is the responsibility of the coach to get the attention of the nearest official and to throw the challenge flag. That's not always an easy situation. Depends on, especially in the Eastern Conference, because in the East, both clubs are on the same side of the field. And so it is possible that you've got a situation where the head coach could possibly be 60, 70 yards from the nearest official. And so very difficult for him to actually get that official's attention. Although we haven't had a lot of sold-out noisy games in the CFL in the last few years, sometimes it gets loud down on the field. So just by yelling doesn't necessarily mean that the coach is going to get the attention of the officials. The position that the league has taken with respect to challenges is if the game day supervisor can attest to the fact that he saw the flag down prior to the snap, they will allow the challenge, regardless of the fact that another play has occurred. Relatively easy decision to make. I ask the question, what would have happened had Toronto gained possession of the football and scored a touchdown? Now, how are you going to explain to Toronto that those points don't count? So that's a difficult one. In my opinion, that and the situation that occurred in the Hamilton Saskatchewan game are pretty similar. Save and except for the fact that in the Hamilton-Saskatchewan game, there is no flag for Coach Steinauer to throw on the ground to get a timeout or to get someone's attention or to demonstrate to the game day supervisor that he's intending on seeking a timeout. But they are quite similar. And I can understand what happens in the game. In both games, the officials all have jobs to do. It's not that they're standing around waiting for the snap of the football. They're finding their keys. They're sorting out where the pressure is. They're sorting out whether or not you've got heavy right, heavy left, and getting all of their attention ready for the snap of the ball. Line of scrimmage guys obviously worried about whether they've got offensive players that have broken the plane of the line of scrimmage, defensive players that have invaded the neutral zone, whether or not you've got guards that have lifted their hands, whether or not the center has jacked the ball, not smooth snapped it, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot that goes on, and they're not just kind of scanning the horizon to see whether or not you've got some crazy guy running down the field at you. You know, lots of times you've watched games, the listeners have watched games where somebody invades the field and comes running from 80 yards mm-hmm. away just to show everyone in the park how brilliant and how quick they are.
Sure.
And I'll tell you, there's lots of times when I was on the field where I didn't even know there was another guy on the field until he got really close to me.
Right.
So I understand in the Hamilton game how the officials could have missed Orlando Steinauer seeking his timeout. Solution, in my opinion, is simple. We've got speakers in the helmets of the quarterback. Put a speaker in the helmet of one of your linebackers, whoever is your quarterback mm-hmm. on defense. Get him a speaker. Coach just has to flip a switch then and yell, call a timeout, or we're challenging. And mm-hmm. then the guys that are in the heat of the action that are right there where all the officials are could bring the situation to the attention of the officials. And frankly, it's likely explainable and it may be acceptable if, for example, that we have an unrecognized challenge flag on the ground, if the defensive captain were simply to call timeout and go over to the referee and say, look, our challenge flag was down and you weren't recognizing it. And in that case, for the referee to say, okay, our bad, we'll give you your challenge and it won't cost you the timeout that you've just taken. Something like that. There's got to be a way to work around it because it's a slippery slope. If something really unexpected happens on that interceding play, I just don't know how you get around it.
Yeah, because you can't say, well, they got points or worked out all right. You're trying to get the attention to make the call.
Yeah.
Well, now we can go back. So it's a tricky one.
Yep.
Bud, one last one before we go to break here. And this comes in via text. Ask Bud why it is that both clubs are on the same side of the field in the East. Because that's actually something I didn't even know.
Yeah.
More cheerleader space on the other side or what?
Well, no. It certainly opens up the display signage, the electronic advertising. So, it's more remunerative potentially for the clubs, especially so in the East, that signage then is uninterrupted for 110 yards and is visible on national television. So your local sponsors are getting greater exposure.
Right.
So you could probably charge more for it. I'm not in that business. I don't know, but I expect that that's part of it. It started, if I recall correctly, it started in Hamilton just because of the configuration of Ivor Wynne Stadium. It was extremely tight, and they put both of the clubs there. But, you know, historically, as long as I've been involved in the league, we've had the clubs on the same side of the field. Ottawa was different until they rebuilt the stadium. So it's just one of the peculiarities of the Canadian Football League.
Situation arose between, I believe, defensive lineman Law with the Stampeders and Trevor Harris, and a brushing of the fingers of Law on Harris's face mask, the quarterback. Maybe walk us through why that call was made as it was.
Well, it's a good question.
Because I was watching the game, and it was hard because it didn't seem that big a deal, but we also got to protect the quarterbacks.
No, and that's the key. Our default this year is protect the quarterback at all costs. And we have said to our officials, we would far prefer that you call a soft one than miss one that is impactful because it's very, very clear that from the player's perspective as well as the fan's perspective, we've got to protect the key players that are with our various football clubs. So that one, it was frankly just the fact that there was some contact to the head area of the quarterback, and there was a degree of reaction from the quarterback. Now, I mean, everyone can understand or appreciate the fact that anytime a hand goes flying close to your face or eyes, you're going to react to it. You're going to jerk a little bit. So But there really was not a serious impact on that one. In terms of a penalty like face mask, that's a fairly straightforward foul. We will not allow you to get your hands onto the grill of another player. If you close your hand over the plastic, it is a penalty, whether you do anything with it or not.
Okay.
If you brush your hand, if as you're coming through to make the tackle, if your hand swipes across the face mask, and even if there is some impact there, if it's not a punch, we're likely going to leave that one alone. The face mask penalty is designed to prevent someone from being able to close their hand on the grill, and now they've got complete control over your entire body.
Right.
You can't do anything when buddy over there has got you by the trap, and he can move you right, left, he can bring you down, he can do anything he wants with you, taking you out of the play. So that's why that penalty exists. There's not a lot of judgment in it. Also, as fans know, we will allow the ball carrier to use his hand and to straight arm an opponent in the face mask. He can't do anything else, but he can essentially punch out with his palm and buy himself an extra few inches of room by keeping his tackler at bay, even if his hand is on his opponent's face mask. Should he close his hand and start to refund it a little bit, situation changes, and now you may find that the ball carrier gets flagged for unnecessary roughness.
But we have a question coming in here from a listener. Why can a coach question the validity of a called legal block on a kick play?
Well, so when we, as we work through the history of replay, we used to allow as one of the enunciated coach challengeable penalties, either called illegal blocks or uncalled illegal blocks. And what we want to do in replay, in my view, is to not launch out into fishing expeditions, as I call them. Some coaches would, in desperate situations, in order to even buy themselves time to sort out what they're going to do next, they may not even care about the result of the replay challenge. So they would challenge that there was a missed illegal block. We burn 2 minutes going through all of the angles, can't see anything. He goes, "Oh, darn." But he's now got his team set and ready to go. So that's now gone. We can only challenge illegal block penalties that have actually been flagged on the field. And frankly, in my view, it's more workable. Looking at kicking plays, there is so much movement, so much action on the field that it is extremely difficult for officials to actually identify where the potential is, where they should put their attention. On pass plays, the officials are assigned one or two receivers. So they're really only looking at two, three, four guys on the field. On kick plays, the officials that are responsible for those blocking infractions are assigned what we call waves. So the deep guys have the first wave, that is the first batch, the gunners coming off of both sides of the line of scrimmage. They're watching what is happening to them as they get close to the returner. And the line of scrimmage guys are looking at what we call the second wave. Again, that's the second group of players that get run down the field. So it potentially, in the second wave, you could have you could have between a half a dozen and 10 players that you're right. looking at. And there's lots of room to hide out there. And everybody's moving full speed. They've got a absolute full head of steam on them. And we're going to miss stuff. It is the part of our game where we have more missed fouls than any other part of the game. And it's just something, frankly, that is likely unsolvable. Listeners, fans might suggest that we wade in a little more frequently from the command center. Mm-hmm. I hesitate to agree with that concept because there's a significant difference, and it's something that I get more in tune with the further I am from the field.
Mm-hmm.
It's extremely difficult to officiate in two dimensions. And that's all you get with television. That's all you get. And right. when you're watching it on TV, that's all you're getting. When you're down on the field, you can see the very subtle little stuff that happens. You can see what players do. So to enable you to decide that that's actually not illegal contact that has occurred, that they've not really broken the underlying tenet of the rule, so to speak, because we all know that there's holding on most plays. There's a lot of illegal blocking that goes on, and only some of the bad stuff needs to be called. We need to allow the players to decide the outcome of the football game, and the officials should just be there as happy helpers to get the ball ready for them to play and to help them up if they're on the ground.
But fantastic stuff. We'll catch up with you next Monday. No holiday next Monday. You're going to have to put a full 5-day in, eh?
I got to put in 5 days. Yeah, exactly. No, looking forward to it. We'll talk to you next week.